Tom Gazzola, I let a bit of the cat out of the bag that I do not like homemade leather belts. Doesn't do anything for me. I had a friend who had one, and the problem that really bothers me is that leather belts stretch. We all know that we all have had leather belts where they stretch, and it would go so far around, almost go to his far side and his left hip. So he'd have to double back and bring it back around and tuck it back in to where he started. I couldn't stand the leather belt, the homemade leather belt, I should say. Where do you come out on this big kind of battle that's raging on the Gregor Show today versus yay or nay to homemade leather belts?
I can't believe. Okay, that sounds pretty sloppy. I'll start there, Struds.
So sloppy.
Very sloppy, and someone like yourself who carries themselves in a distinguished manner. You've got the European look, obviously, from your Swedish roots and your time spent there. You're well-dressed. Sometimes you could pull off the scarf, unlike many others in North America. So I could see why it bothers you. I don't particularly care for it. The making your own belt thing is something I've only seen in a few instances. I know someone who actually had like a boys' night, and there's a company around here that you can make your own belt. You have some drinks, you play like pool and billiards and stuff like billiards and darts and all that stuff, and then you make your own belt. That's not really anything that's tickled my fancy, if you will. But Strutty, yeah, if you're gonna have a belt, you want it to fit properly, and a sloppy belt can ruin a very good outfit, I would say.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's like you have it, then you have it burned on there, like the guy's name Red. You know, homemade leather belt with his name Red on there. Just, I don't know what it is.
That's tacky.
Can't do it. Can't do it, no. Man. Sorry. Sorry for all those people wearing a homemade leather belt. I don't dress very well, so you can criticize pretty much anything
you
I wear.
You do, though.
Nah, I don't. My wife dresses me. If it's up to me, I come out looking like I dressed in the dark with no clue or plan of what I was trying to do. Tommy G, Tyler Benson, you know, the contract, we can't get too worked up about one or another. It's a contract that he has. What does he have to do in training camp to secure a spot on the opening day roster?
Struds, this is going to be interesting. Obviously, storyline we'll be watching next month when camp opens up. I mean, he has to just continue to play solid. I mean, he had a very solid year in the AHL last year, probably, let's not kid ourselves, would have gotten called up if there were no border issues, if the Oilers, I know they only called up McLeod, but if they were in need of wingers. And I think that Benson's got to be in the mix. But the other thing, too, is that with all the guys signed, he's probably in the mix for one of the last forward jobs, and the other two guys that are in that mix with them are now probably Brendan Perlini, who was signed recently, and Kyle Turris. And I think Benson has the leg up on those two for the simple fact that he is drafted and developed by this team. He's played exceptionally well throughout his years in the AHL, and on top of that, he comes at a good price point. So I think given that, you could say, well, what about Perlini? Perlini, same price, a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit faster. But this is a guy that, you know, you brought in kind of for depth, has not been in the NHL recently, and is not one of your own homegrown talents. And then you go, well, what about Kyle Turris? I think Kyle Turris is going to have a steep uphill climb to make this team. And I say that because of A, his price point, and the cap sort of issues that the Oilers are still trying to dance around a little bit here as they try to get Kyler Yamamoto wrapped up too, as well as the fact that Kyle Turris played himself into obscurity last year. And I know he's putting in the work, he's putting in the effort and the time at the rink. He's been there basically since the start of July, trying to show that level of commitment that he's ready to be a solid NHL contributor again. But I don't know if it'll be too little too late. Like, I feel like he's going to have to be absolutely lights out at camp to reclaim that spot on the active roster. So that's where I think it might be an advantageous situation for a guy like Tyler Benson. And then I'd put in Perlini in second, and then probably Turris third. And then I know people are probably saying, well, what about Holloway? I'm sure in time we're going to see him up with the big club if he's playing well down in Bakersfield. But my gut says he probably starts in Bakersfield unless he lights it up at camp too.
Yeah, I just look at it this way. And Benson's done everything you've asked him. And so I think you got to say, okay, what can this guy do? Like, what we didn't see him a whole lot. When I say we, the team didn't see him all last year in the NHL. So it's easy. Put Holloway in the minors. And not that you're burying him down there. He just goes down there and learns to be a pro and just kind of gets his beak wet a little bit. And then Perlini, is anyone picking up this guy up on waivers? Like, I just don't think they're like, oh, my God, Perlini. Like, anyone could have signed him, right? So I just don't see, unless he destroys it in training camp. And this isn't a knock on Perlini, but you just have to look at, he's no longer a prospect. He's just a player now, right? That's where he's at. Not say he can't get himself going and become, you know, what he was once under Dave Tippett. But I just, it's like sometimes the math just works out, you know, or the contract situations. You just say, okay, well, Perlini and Dylan Holloway go to the minors. A, because Holloway's not going to be put on, he doesn't have to be put on waivers. We got Perlini, who's not going to be picked up on waivers, and we can always bring him up if Benson doesn't work out after a certain amount of time. But yeah. I just think for guarding your assets, I think that just kind of makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And Strutty, when I thought of Perlini, like I liked him a couple of years ago when he was with the Coyotes. But it almost feels like certain guys, when they kind of fall off the hockey map and fall through the cracks or however you want to describe it, it's tough to be back on the scene and to just jump right in unless you've got a coach or a GM that really is adamant that they bring you in and incorporate you onto the roster. But with the roster that's been built right now, you look at it, you go, I think it's pretty much set outside of maybe that 13th, 14th forward position, depending how the Oilers want to construct this roster in 2021-22.
Joined by Thomas Cazola for Tiny Tom's Tiny Tidings. When you look at the deals that have been done, we know Fogel got signed, we know Nurse got signed, Benson got signed, Stuart Skinner got signed. To me, it looks like there's only one guy left, and that's Kyler Yamamoto. How do you, what would you think the Oilers are going to do, and what would you do if you're the Oilers as far as term?
This feels like a bridge contract situation, doesn't it? I mean, he had a struggle to his second half of the season last year, obviously, with the lack of scoring, call it snake bit, whatever. He was in the right place at the right time, couldn't convert, couldn't finish, bit of bad luck. I know he was a little bit banged up for a small stretch of the latter part of the season. And he started out okay, obviously coming off a really strong half year the year prior. So I don't think he has a ton of leverage in this case. And, you know, if you know, recency bias being what it is, the Oilers could just say, listen, you haven't proved a ton yet. You've shown us some great glimpses, some excellent flashes. You haven't been consistent. And we like you. And so maybe that leads to like a $1.5 million, something like that. 2 years, $1.5 million per year. You know, I don't think it goes the way of a Jordan Kyrou, who got, I think, around 2.8. I don't think Yamamoto has that leverage at this point, and the team can kind of take that to their advantage and pay less for him. So I think it gets done, probably a very reasonable deal, and he's got to prove himself again. He's got to show us whether he's the guy that almost had a point a game when he first broke into the league full-time with Nugent Hopkins and Draisaitl, or if he's somewhere in between the guy that played last season and was, you know, good to start but then didn't finish well. So it'll be interesting, and he's got a lot to prove. I don't think they're ready to just open up the wallet and say, take a bunch of money, because they don't have it, A, and B, he hasn't done enough to deserve all of it just yet.
Sammy Reinhart signs a 3-year deal with Florida Panthers for $6.5 million a year. This player, you look at some of the other additions they've done as they head into, you know, next season. Are they moving up your favorite teams to win? Maybe even counting Florida within Florida or against Tampa.
They're interesting, those Struds. Like, you look at the lineup and you're like, okay, they've got Barkov. Everyone knows who Barkov is now because they said he was kind of like the best-kept secret around the league. Huberto has been around for a long time. Ton of respect there. Good pickup in Duclair last year. Bennett at the deadline, getting him out of a tough situation in Calgary. And they have some decent depth players, too. Verhaeghe was good. That was a sharp signing. Mason Marchment looks like he's on the up and up. And now you add in Sam Reinhart. You got Patrick Hornqvist, who's a good veteran. So this team that played in, I think, a pretty weak division last year should have the confidence, and I know they went toe-to-toe with Tampa, to have another strong season. They've clearly got the goaltending. And their defense, if Aaron Ekblad's good to go after that nasty injury last year, it looks respectable. Doesn't look like it's strong point when it comes to this team. This could be a decent team. And, you know, could it compete for top spot in the division? Perhaps, but it's got a couple of teams in there, including Tampa, that's going to be tough to contend with. This is a good team that we can't just brush aside on a cold Tuesday in January when they roll through town. This is a team you got to take note of, and that's where they've gotten to. And it's long overdue because, you know as well as I, Strutty, they were just kind of the forgotten team. And now all of a sudden that seems like the Arizona Coyotes again. The Florida Panthers, I think, are trying to make a statement that they're legit. And Joel Quenneville has got them playing really well. I think last year was no fluke.
So I'm on record, Thomas Cazola, suggesting that Sam Bennett won't finish his four-year contract in Florida. I look at a player that is, he was always hot to trot in the playoffs, and yeah, that's a great thing. But in regular season, you know, I believe he did get some opportunity there, you know, and they needed him to be more than he was, and he wasn't. So does a change of venues or a change of teams? Does that just automatically say, okay, now I know I'm going to start trying as hard in regular season as I do in playoffs? Like, I just think this is a tough one. I think this is a tough deal for these guys.
Yeah, Struts, but there was obviously frustration in Calgary, and it didn't just come up last year. Like, that has been an issue with Bennett and the Flames, or was an issue with Bennett and the Flames for what? A good 3-4 years. He always thought he was going to be playing ahead of where he was in the lineup. Obviously, that came to a head, and he demanded for the trade last year. Like, I think that was something that bothered him and affected him, and maybe just that clean slate and the trust that Joel Quenneville and the Panthers are putting in him. And maybe that taps into the consistency, and that gives him the confidence to play the way he does in the postseason, the same in the regular season. But the other thing too is, like, postseason hockey, regular season hockey, we all know it's a little bit different. The intensity's way up, and that kind of suits Sam Bennett. But if he can avoid taking bad penalties, he could chip in offensively, which he's proven that he has the capability of doing, and he gets a consistent shift in the top six, maybe top nine at times, I think it'll be okay. I think he'll be able to ride it out. He's still a relatively young player. He's got a lot of experience under his belt. Struds, I think he does last all 4 years there and maybe gets extended a few more if it all works out, because he's part of a group of guys that are kind of in the same age category that might feel like they can surge and make a run in the postseason a couple of times in the next few years.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I just see him as a guy who's going to be frustrating, like Zach Kassian can be at times, right? And I mean, I like the idea of him. I really like the idea. But when it gets to be middle of the season and you're not doing much, I don't know. If a guy hasn't shown it for this long, you know, is he all of a sudden going to change it? And he'll have a chance to prove it. So I think it's a great comment, Tommy, and we'll be able to revisit this in about 1,200 days, and we'll know exactly who was right. And you can apologize for that conversation then. All right, Tommy, we'll go home. And, I know you're going to burn all your homemade leather belts. So thanks for jumping on. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Big Cat.
No homemade leather belts for me and you, Strutty. No homemade leather belts.
All right, Tommy Cazola.